Good morning. Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you this morning. As introduced, I'm John Ulford. I'm the executive director at Camp Philaqua, and it's an amazing opportunity to come and share with you this morning. Camp Philaqua sometimes is a quiet place, not like all the time. Often camp is loud and chaotic with shouting and laughing and silliness, games like you witnessed up here. And there's often someone always feels like calling for my attention. I love that part of where I live. I love the chaos and joy of our summer seasons. But at the end of summer and between the rental groups in winter, camp can be a very quiet place. The quiet part of this place has gotten quieter for me in recent years as my kids grow up and engage with video games and friends and hobbies and need fewer inputs from me as they grow in life. I find sometimes I have whole days of quiet. This is especially true right now. January at Camp Philaqua means weekend rentals. We've got a group of, I think there's about 80 scouts at camp right now. But midweek is used to get ready for summer camp. I spend a lot of time in my office. I spend a lot of time focusing on what is coming, and it's quiet. I love to wander around Camp Philaqua when it's quiet. And my dogs love it too. We've had a string of dogs that have shared our time at Philaqua, and right now we have two young Bernedoodles named Alfie and Arthur, and we love them dearly. They've learned lots of things in their two short years on this earth. They can come, they can sit, they can lie down with varying levels of enthusiasm. They've learned just how much abuse the cat would take before she puts away the soft paws and makes them cry. They've learned that the green bag that I wear on my hip when we go on walks is full of goodies, and it's worth heading my way when I call them. I call my dogs with a whistle. I can whistle with my fingers. I won't do it in here because it makes my ears hurt and it'll make your ears hurt too. It's very loud. I taught myself to whistle with my fingers by walking around a quiet camp for what seemed like months, making a lot of spit and little noises, and then eventually got better at it. And now I can whistle loudly and effectively enough that I've actually reffed soccer games using just my fingers. I know, you're impressed, I can tell. My dogs know that when they hear my whistle, it's time to go look for me. When camp is quiet, I can call my dogs back from anywhere on the property. Camp Philaqua is about 250 acres. They could be a half mile away, and they hear me, and they come running. When camp is loud, when there's kids, when there's chaos, when there's lots of friendly people who will pet them, I'm lucky if they hear me at the lodge, which is 100 meters distant from my house. Even something as loud as my whistle doesn't reach them when the world is loud and interesting and exciting. I think this is why God called Samuel in the quiet. I wonder sometimes if God had tried calling a few times during the day and Samuel hadn't heard it. Maybe he was too busy cleaning the temple or organizing Eli's stuff or making food or whatever it was that a young boy did to help out in that place. Maybe there were too many friendly folks and exciting smells to hear that whistle. It took the quiet for Samuel to hear the call. Finding a quiet place is its own kind of challenge. Our modern lives offer a lot of noise, at least mine seems to. From the tangible ambient noise of traffic and people and the piped-in music in restaurants to the metaphorical noise of our obligations, of our social media, of our amazing opportunities for media. All of these things that we rise to meet in our lives, there is a lot of noise. The first challenge is finding a quiet place. Quiet places can still be found in this world. You could visit Camp Philaqua tomorrow, it'll be quiet. But they can also be created. I love to go for walks in the woods. At camp and on the Crown land that is to the west of us at Camp Philaqua. And I love to take old man naps, chair naps, I know. Right? It's a bit of a tangent, but follow me here. My family tells me I look a lot like my maternal grandfather. We certainly have a similar hairline. And he would nod off anytime he sat down. He was a dairy farmer for many years, and he always got up at 5 in the morning, and anytime he sat down in a couch for more than about 5 minutes, he was asleep. And as I push myself further into middle age, I find myself with similar temptations. Even in my house, there is noise, but I can create a quiet place in the middle of chaos with a few simple strategies. One is a white noise machine, and one is pulling my toque down over my eyes. If you know me outside of church, you know I almost always have a toque on. I am profoundly bald, and my head gets cold. So I have toques on, I put my earbuds in, I turn on the white noise app on my phone, and I pull my toque down over my face, and I drift off until one of my dogs jumps on me, or Nikki decides that's long enough and hits me with a pillow. It's not a perfect system. This helps me catch a few winks on the couch, but it also helps me focus when I have focus work to do, like writing sermons. My boys were home from school when I wrote this, and as I sat at the kitchen table with my white noise earbuds in, and it created a space that disconnected me from the moment that was around me, a space to think, a space to ponder, and a space to listen. For me, when I go to a quiet place, I go to the woods. I go to the woods to listen. I will often drive to a different woods than the one I live in, and this may seem silly as I live in a beautiful piece of woods, but the woods I live in are also my place of work, and so being somewhere else helps to disconnect from my task list. Once I have entered a quiet place, the next step is actually being quiet. I love to listen to podcasts. I call them my stories, and I often listen to them while I'm driving to the woods, and then I'll often keep the earbud in because I just want to hear the end of this one, and I wear them into the woods, and this subconsciously forces me, takes me away from where I am. I have to be conscious. I have to take my earbuds out. I have to leave them in the car. I also love to talk to myself. My Nikki makes fun of me. Nikki's my wife, by the way, if you haven't met her. She makes fun of me, but I often pregame conversations I will have in the future or just run an issue by myself out loud. The classic, but where else will I get expert advice, joke applies. But for me, it helps to say things out loud. This keeps me from hearing what is going on around me. It keeps me from being present, and it is often the running of a deer I never saw, or the caw of a raven, or the explosion of a grouse flying up from almost at my feet, that finally gets me to shut up. When I start paying attention, when I start listening, I start to connect with the woods. I find it often takes a while to get it takes a while in that place to slow me down enough to listen. I need to marinate in the quiet in order long enough for it to soak in. I also, another challenge, I like to walk fast. I don't really realize I do this until I went into the woods with someone else. I often have an idea of where I want to go, and I'll set out a clip to get there. Moving fast is great. It's cardio, right? I have long legs, and I'm good at moving fast. I also walk right past lots of interesting things. I recently took a friend for a walk, and he kept stopping to ask me about this bush or that flower, and wouldn't you know it, I'd never gone slow enough to notice that they were there. I was reminded of the power of slowing down, of noticing the things that are right there. When my kids were little, we noticed everything. We moved at toddler pace, and every speck of color we passed was a miracle. I've lost track of this, and I have to be conscious about my speed. So I play tricks on myself. I bring what I call bougie trail coffee, and when I find a good spot to sit, I sit and I pull out a stove and I heat water and I make a cup of thick pour-over coffee, and then I sit and I drink it. I don't allow myself to get up and get up to speed again until the coffee is gone and cleaned up and packed up. You would think that just noticing these characteristics in myself would be enough for me to slow down, but I don't seem to have that level of self-awareness or maybe self-control. So bougie trail coffee stops me in my tracks. I sit and I watch the world for the time it takes to heat, brew, and drink a cup of coffee, and for this window, I am slow. This is a time of sitting, of watching, of listening. It is almost always during this time that I notice the three-toed woodpecker working the trees along the edge of the clearing, or the northern harrier hunting in the open lowlands, or the red squirrel stuffing yet another lodgepole pine cone into his cache under a fallen tree. The last thing I have to do to help myself listen is I have to let go of my goals. I usually set out into the woods with an objective. I want to get up onto that ridge and walk to that low spot and then east into the next valley, and then I'll loop around to get home again. And I love to see new ground, and as I explore, that means traveling further. This means moving fast and steady until I get there, and this means being loud, and this means missing things. Seeking my goals is not conducive to listening. I have to let go of the idea of being goal-oriented, of my goal-oriented exploring, and just be in the woods. I try to get a good walk in a few times a month. It's a commitment. It takes half a day. I'm usually tired and grubby afterwards, and with all of this, God still hasn't tapped me on the shoulder and told me what comes next. But I have heard something, though. Within the whoosh of raven's wings, the clatter of squirrels, and the thump of grouse drumming, I've certainly found some peace. forest floor has absorbed my tears on many occasions. I've experienced a wash of peace sometimes, but sometimes I just get tired and sweaty. But often I come home feeling just a bit better. God has walked with me some kilometers in the forest, while no one whispered directly in my ear, maybe I felt an arm on my shoulder. The thing is, if you listen, you'll hear something. The next step, of course, is figuring out what. A few years ago, I was talking with the youth leadership team, and I was asking about any experience they have with calling. We were doing a snow camp, and the topic was calling, and I wanted to see kind of where we could dig around the edges and what might be interesting there. And I had the comment from a youth that said, I never experienced a direct calling, but people in my church asked me to do things. That really landed with me. The people who do the calling are the body of Christ, and we are the body of Christ. I've never experienced a direct calling from God, but once, about 20 years ago, I was sitting in a church sanctuary in the middle of a job transition, and I saw a bulletin announcement announcing a position of camp director at Camp Fulacqua. That was one of maybe three Sundays I went to church that winter. Was that a calling? I sure see God's fingerprints on it when I look back. The callings I have heard are from people that I trust, people that are smarter and wiser than me. Discerning the source of that calling involves listening to a person, presenting the idea, and then prayerfully trying to see if it's true. In the words of Mother Teresa, it's the words of one of my favorite camp songs, Christ has no body here but ours, no hands and feet here on earth but ours. God uses our bodies, our hands and our feet, the hands and feet, the bodies of our friends and family, to God's purposes. I know you, as a group, as a church community, are in a place of listening. My personal practices have helped me sort out what comes next on a few occasions, but taking the room full of you into the woods likely wouldn't have the same effect. So I have some basic, I still believe there are some basic pieces that translate. Find a quiet place, or make one. This can be constructed or discovered. At camp, we do what we call TOG time, time alone with God. I know TOG time is redundant because it's time alone with God time, but anyway, just go with me. Time alone with God. We can be alone and listening within sight of each other, or even sometimes on the same couch. I have a friend who has a prayer closet, a quiet, peaceful place to focus, pray, and listen. Or you can go for a walk in the woods, or at your local park. You can put your earbuds in and pull your toque down over your eyes. A quiet place is available to you if you seek it. We can make quiet places together. We can share times of discernment. Sometimes quietness doesn't mean physical quietness. It means a quieting of what's outside of this room. We can, by focusing on each other, we can quiet what is outside of this room, and we can be present in this moment together. Once you find your quiet place, you have to spend time there. You have to do it on purpose. Trick yourself into slowing down if you need to. Use a prayer routine or a coffee ritual or a mindfulness practice. Get together with friends and focus on those friends. All of these things are things that we do to be conscious in that quiet place. For me, a big piece then is letting go of your goals. Allow yourself to experience the world as it is right now. I'm not suggesting you abandon your goals in life. Just suspend them in this moment. Maybe turn the notifications off on your watch. Helps me. And then discern what you heard. Spend time reflecting on what you've heard and hold it up to see if it's true. Lean into the wisdom of this body. Talk to people about what you hear and listen carefully to their answers. I admit advice is hard to take, and something, it's a word that I almost reject outright, but the idea of advice is easier for me to stomach if I think about it as wisdom. Listen to the wisdom of those around you. Some of you are blessed with more wisdom than others, but all of us have something to offer, and if we put it together, we create a direction that is something approaching wise. I know it's a time of transition for you. I know there are exciting potentials in the future for you as a church, but as you do this transition, I hope that you will think about creating space and listening. So I want to leave you with a question to think about, to ponder, to respond with. How do you make space to listen? And what have you heard? Thank you for your time.